welcome to another edition of the Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift, and joining me from New York is Rafat Ali. How's it going?
Good, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I know you're getting ready to actually vacate Manhattan and head to the outer boroughs.
Not so. I'm going to stop you there. Not outer boroughs. Just across the river, I can see complete all skyline of Manhattan. And when you come to New York next, I will walk you over to my borough just to make you show how close it is to Manhattan.
No, I'm only joking, of course. Long Island City is not that far away. And it's no different than, I guess, being in like Hoboken, New Jersey or something.
It is exactly that, yeah. So it's the other side. And so we're moving tomorrow as well. And it's just been an extremely busy week, news week as well.
No doubt. I mean, especially around newspapers, and I know for us, whenever we think about newspapers, it's always kind of like that uncle who kind of has cancer, and you're just like, well, is it a really bad cancer? Is it terminal? Is it maybe he can have some treatment and figure out a way around it? It's just there's always this question of like, you know, you're sad and you're sentimental about things that happen in newspapers, and yet, you know, the reality is that people move on and, you know, go on to other things. I mean, I still read newspapers, but all on iPad. And I know you get the Sunday New York Times, but just to get the digital package. I mean, are you reading the print still?
I am on the weekends, yes. So Saturday, Sunday, because that's what I get. It's sort of a nice difference compared to my daily routine, which is I do wake up and have tea, which is what I drink, and then use my iPad to catch up on email, Twitter, Facebook, and occasionally read the New York Times, open the app, New York Times app, even though I get a lot of New York Times news through Twitter, Facebook. But on weekends, I think it's more relaxing. I don't have to check all kinds of other stuff. I just focus on print while I read the newspaper, while I have my tea.
Yeah, I mean, next week we're going to be doing a special on Media Shift about unplugging from technology. And I guess the one thing a newspaper or a print magazine gives you is, you know, it gives you the chance to kind of unplug and not be electronic for a little while.
Yeah, there's a report that I'm reading that we hopefully will ask our guest Larry Kramer about as well. But it's a report from USA Today. It's admittedly self-serving research by USA Today, which is talking up its hotel, its reputation as a hotel newspaper, and how people read it more in hotels when they want to unplug because they want to be in touch with the world as opposed to reading USA Today at their home. So it's an interesting sort of adjunct to all the news that's coming out now.
Yeah, I'm definitely, when I traveled, did a lot of business travel, it's weird. I mean, that's the time I almost felt like it was my duty to pick up USA Today for whatever reason. Maybe it was the one that was just always around, and it's just so easy to pick up. And I mean, you just see it sitting everywhere, but it did feel like really the travel newspaper.
And I think their whole thing is it's like a catch-up newspaper because of its format as well. So I think they're now playing up that, they sort of fell into that, box, which is, I guess, good for them. So we'll ask hopefully Larry Kramer, who's going to come on as our guest.
Yeah, so for this show, we're going to talk a lot about kind of the future of print newspapers, just because so many newspapers now, with the New Orleans Times-Picayune and some newspapers in Canada, have cut back the amount of their print runs in the days that they do a print paper. So we're going to talk about, we're going to have a really good roundtable of people to talk about kind of the future of print newspapers with Jay Rosen and Larry Kramer. And then we'll also have on Brian Boyer, who's kind of one of the hacker journalists who got a degree at Medill and was on the news application team at the Chicago Tribune, just took a job at NPR, National Public Radio, to run a news app team there of 7 people. So we'll talk to him about what their plans are at NPR second. So now let's talk about the future for print newspapers. A lot of newspapers are now cutting back on their print frequency. We had the New Orleans Times-Picayune going to 3 times a week. Post Media in Canada is dropping their frequency for 3 of their papers in Calgary, Edmonton, and Ottawa, where they'll no longer have Sunday papers. And in Canada, Sunday Saturday is the big paper in Canada. So Sunday is not the one that a lot of people read. So is this a bad sign for newspaper, or is this just basically a sign for change? Our guests are Jay Rosen and Larry Kramer. Jay Rosen has been a professor of journalism at New York University since 1986. He writes the blog Press Think about what's happening to journalism in the digital age. He wrote the book What Are Journalists For in 1999. He's on the board of advisors to Digital First Media in the US and Post Media in Canada. Welcome to our show, Jay.
Thank you very much, Mark.
And then Larry Kramer is the new publisher and president of USA Today. He's a 40-year veteran of the media business with 20 years as a reporter. He founded MarketWatch and ran it for 12 years before it was sold to Dow Jones, then became president of CBS Digital Media. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Hey, thank you.
So, Jay, first of all, you've given some advice to some of these newspaper publishers, and you've followed this space for a while. What do you think about this idea of going to lower frequency on print publications? Is this a good idea? Is this going to hurt them? What kind of advice do you give papers on this idea?
Well, I don't advise on that particular thing. I think it's a tactical decision that companies have to make as they look at their revenues. What I think is far more important is that what used to be called a newspaper company has to change its production routine so that it is no longer organized around print production. So whether you are 7 days a week, 5 days a week, or 2 days a week in print, what you have to do is change your organization so that it is no longer worshiping the production god of the printing press. And from there, I think a new kind of newsroom emerges. What's disturbing to me is not necessarily the loss of this print product, it's the failure to develop new sources of revenue. It's really the revenue that we should be concentrated on, not the package.
And what about, in the case of the Times-Picayune, they're going to 3 times a week, and they're also cutting a lot of the staff, and I'm guessing reporting staff as well. And it seems like if you're going to have this kind of digital first strategy, and try to do more in digital, cutting staff, that doesn't, I could see cutting staff when it comes to print or what you're talking about, production, print, printing presses, delivery, all those things you should be able to cut back on. But why would you cut back on your reporting? That doesn't seem to make as much sense.
No, it doesn't. When you see that, it's usually a result of the fact that management just doesn't know what else to do. It is important to get, I think, the capital of the company out of the printing business. So the approach that John Payton has taken with Digital First Media is sell the trucks, sell the presses, contract with other companies for those services, reduce cost, but also capital investment in everything except local sales and local content production. In the announcement we had last week about New Orleans, it didn't really explain why they were cutting back staff. It explained why they were going from 7 days a week to 3 or 4, but the real reason they were cutting back on staff from the newsroom just seemed to be a general revenue problem and a
Well,
lack of any other solution.
I think the some of the staff cutbacks, even though they're in the editorial department, don't necessarily mean they have to do with news gathering. There's a lot of production going into producing a daily newspaper. And there are a lot of people who do things that are involved in presentation and, and copy editing and all kinds of all levels of functions that involve that you need to do to get a paper out. And, some of them obviously are news gathering and are important, but some are production oriented, even though they're in the editorial department. In fact, more and more of what used to be production work got foisted on the editorial department with technology changes, the design of the pages, this and that. So if you're going from 7 days to 3 days, and there are advertising reasons to do it, and basically I think they cut out the lowest advertising days when they couldn't sell ads, And so some of that is natural. I think the editor there, Jim Amos, is a very strong editor and a good investigative editor, as well as just traditional journalism. And I think, you know, he's got to believe, if it's going to work, that he's able to preserve the core functions of what they're supposed to be. And I mean, I agree with everything Jay said. I think the you know, this is not about news or news consumption. It's about the newspaper, and newspapers, you know, have to, for some time, have had to view themselves, if they're going to survive, have had to view themselves as being in the news business, not the newspaper business. And that fundamental change that's going on in a newsroom, if you're as he said, if you're four or 5 days or 2 days or 7 days, is you have to have the ability to deliver it. You have to build the revenue models that get you paid, whether they're directly from consumers or through advertisers, however you're delivering it. Now, I think the paper, a printed word, will still be part of the scenario for some time. I don't know how frequently, but, you know, I've watched the New York Times go and push a weekend only print edition and give you digital if you do that. And I think that's part of the experimentation going on, things like that.
And that's buoyed a lot of the circulation at some of these papers. They've seen actual rises in their Sunday circulation, a lot of that because of the digital package, right?
Yeah, of course. But I think that, you know, it's not impossible that the long-term play is that people have time to sit and read on weekends and might do that, whether it's Saturday or Sunday, more likely than they'll do it during the week. And so the idea that you might wind up with, you know, weekend-only print products is not totally out of the question. And that the organizations delivering more timely news during the week on more timely platforms. So the newspapers are kind of becoming a little bit like the news magazines of 20 years ago, you know. And if that's where the organization heads, that's fine. But it just, that the business, the difficulty in that transition that Jay was talking about, I can't begin to tell you how, you know, difficult that is, how hard it is for an organization when you do something every day. The need to change that routine and do it differently is very difficult, but it has to happen. It's the future of the place. It's the future of the business.
And so now you're at USA Today, and they're in a little bit of a different position because they're a national paper. They're not exactly like a regional paper like the Times-Picayune. Do you think that they're 6 days a week?
No, five.
5 days a week, right. They've got the weekend edition. So would they consider going even lower than that? Is that something you guys might look at?
You know, I don't know. I wouldn't rule anything out. But right now, you know, we're kind of a unique newspaper in that, you know, we circulate heavily in places, in travel locations, in hotels, on airplanes and things like that. And to a lot of America, we're sort of their hometown newspaper when they're on the road. And there's been a surprising resilience in terms of people who want to have a print product when they're traveling or when they're in a hotel room or on an airplane. So we've had some, I don't know if it's just, you know, a timing thing or if it's a long-term, it's a long-term pattern, but I think you have to look at every newspaper and its audience differently and see what works. I think for, you know, just like some cities, 3 days a week may be the answer. But, you know, for USA Today, there is a rhythm, a drumbeat to how it produces news. We have some weekend products. We have a USA Today weekend magazine that's in, you know, 20 or 30 million homes. We've had pretty aggressive digital platforms for some time. Part of what we have to go through is to continue to push the newsroom to a 24/7 rhythm. And to make sure that, you know, nothing is held back from the platforms it needs to be on, and that we start producing things that are important to each platform, like video and things like that, or will be irrelevant as a news organization eventually.
Jay, when you talk to some of the, you know, you're doing some consulting and you're talking to a lot of people at different newspapers, what do you feel like is one of the biggest kind of cultural challenges when it comes to thinking digital first versus print? I mean, there is so much built into people used to doing a thing as a certain way. I mean, what are the biggest challenges you see for them?
I think the biggest challenge, and I was thinking this as Larry was talking, is that people who learned the print production routine and learned newspaper journalism, I think, weren't quite aware of how many of the choices they made and how many of the routines they mastered were actually artifacts of a particular production era. And in a way, they haven't had to think as hard about serving the user because they could serve the production routine. So the fact that you had a certain amount of space enabled you to imagine your job as filling that space. And after a while, you become good at that, and you call that journalism, or you call that news. Now, when those templates are gone and that those slots don't mean as much anymore, I think people have to go back and kind of like rediscover what serving people with news and information and journalism is really about. And the print era as well as the broadcast era allowed them in a subtle way to kind of distance themselves from the users. So I see that as the biggest challenge. In a way, print production routines as well as broadcast production routines were an intellectual crutch that isn't there anymore.
Is do you think the newspaper industry, or generally magazine, or even publishing industries, love with sort of pack the new packaging that they thought would be the cure with iPads and tablets, that love is over to some extent? And you see a lot of figures now about how they haven't necessarily taken off in iPad, even though mobile usage in general is skyrocketing.
Well, Larry and I were both at the paid content conference last week, and from what I heard from the magazine publishers there, or Fire, you were there too, they totally see the iPad subscription, they said, as their deliverance. And they're thinking of the web as kind of like a promotional gateway to selling subscriptions on the iPad. So for the magazine publishers, I think they're still seeing it as their savior.
I agree. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be their savior or not, but I do think it's proving to be a market they understand and a product that they understand better. It has a lot more similarity to the print product than any of the other digital products because it's a controlled environment. You get to present the package of news, of words, text, and video, if you have it, or photographs, the way you do it on the magazine. And one of the best things it provides, because of the navigation, is the ability to have full page and quite dramatic advertising. So they're seeing people who have the habit of reading magazines more comfortable taking going from that habit to a presentation. And it has a bit of finality to it. A lot of the iPad presentations are not, you know, are downloads, and it has an element of something's finished. Unlike, you know, live, you know, mobile or computer-based internet connectivity where, you know, sites are moving while you're reading them.
What would you guys do at USA Today? I mean, now that you look at their portfolio of kind of iPad apps and mobile apps, is there what would you like to see more of there?
Well, I mean, I think we have to be more native to each of these. To each of the platforms we're on. I think we've spent up to this point, we did a good job of interpreting the paper onto a platform, but we didn't really advance our coverage either in time, except for somewhat in some timeliness. We didn't really advance it as much as we probably could have. We did a very yeoman job. We have a lot of people on our platforms, but we really need to become more native in each of them. We need to use video more. We need to do a number of things. And you know, I think on top of that, we're not off the hook, so to speak, on the print side either. You know, there are things we have to do to make the print product better. There are good and bad print products too. I mean, you go to and this, I think, affects a lot of, you know, how the speed with which some papers are reducing frequency can sometimes have a lot to do with the value of the content in there. And it, you know, it's not always the newspaper's fault. Sometimes it's, you know, there just isn't a lot of news in some places that might justify a daily newspaper anymore, when so much of the real-time information that used to also be in there has already been out. But it also means that papers have to reevaluate what it is they're putting in and what the value is. When USA Today started, one of its really major points of differentiation was it covered, take sports for instance, it covered the whole country. So if I was going into a hotel room in Cincinnati and I came from San Francisco, I could actually read four or five paragraphs on the Giants game. And it was great for me. It was like my hometown paper somewhere else. I was able to – and you couldn't do that from anywhere else at the time when they launched that. There wasn't the internet. There weren't a lot of places. You know, now I'm watching the Giants game on my iPad. Our relevance to that audience can't be that we're delivering, you know, four paragraphs on the Giants game from yesterday. So we have to adjust, and we have to adjust because the audience has adjusted, whether we like it or not. And that goes for all the new platforms, and it goes for the old platforms too.
Mark, that reminds me of something I wanted to answer to your previous question.
Okay.
One of the most difficult things I find is that people who are now producing commodity content don't know they're producing commodity content, and it isn't easy to persuade them they're producing commodity content.
This is do what you do best and link to the rest.
Yes, but also it's what Larry said, that some things that were valuable in a different information environment are no longer valuable.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter that you're good at them and that you've mastered the art of them, because they simply don't have enough value. And it's hard to persuade people who are actually very skilled at a particular information routine that there is no call for that anymore.
Yeah, it's unfair, you know. Had a job for 30 years, did a great job at it, got better and better at it, and then suddenly it's like, well, we actually don't need that anymore.
Right.
And some places who cling to still doing it make a mistake, and they make it, you know, make it easier for people to go elsewhere.
So, Larry, if you were to reimagine sort of, and I'm looking at the parallels of a company that you worked at previously, CBS, where Les Moonves brought in Katie Couric and said, we're going to blow up the whole format and we're going to reinvent evening news. They weren't necessarily successful at it. What parallels do you see? Like, what would you reimagine in a daily newspaper, not necessarily USA Today, because as you said, it's a unique case as opposed to sort of other papers. But how do you even begin to reimagine what the paper would look like?
Well, you know, you really have to start at the same place you start with every product, which is the users. You know, what do customers want? What would they appreciate? So one of the things going on today is everybody's got access to tons more information than they can use. And they need all the help they can get sort of sorting through it and figuring out what's important for them, what sites are important for them to go to, what, you know, they're just overwhelmed. And they don't have great curators to help them, you know, understand where to spend their time. You know, which of 10,000 shoe bloggers should you read if you want to buy a pair of shoes? And I think one of the things print media does is it does have it eases your a kind of a tension, a natural tension you have, which is that, you know, it never stops. There's just all this information piling on, and I'm looking, but they're even changing it while I'm looking. And instead, a newspaper, any printed matter, has a finality to it, has that, which I was referencing before. So you can actually start to read it and go through it, and it can help you. So it has a limited amount of space. You have a limited brain. So if it sits there and says, you know what, I'm going to look at the best as a newspaper, we're going to scour the web and look for the very best, entertainment videos. And we're going to, in print, once a week or once a day or once whatever, we're going to summarize them for you. You know, we're going to curate that whole world for you. It's a quick, fast, efficient way for me to help me do something. What you don't do as a newspaper anymore is tell somebody something first. You know, that's over. And so you have to find ways to save people time, to give them things they want, or allow them and help them get what they want in less time. I mean, the beauty of USA Today when it started 30 years ago, ironically, the tradition was that they really reinvented storytelling in the newspaper genre. They stopped using just words, and they dominated with graphics, color photos, and they were the first paper I remember growing when I was, you know, covering their start. They were the first paper who, if they put something in a map, they didn't do that. They didn't restate it in the story. They actually paid attention to each of the elements that were there, and they just used that element to tell that part of the story. And it was a much more efficient read. And one of the reasons it succeeded was you could scan it and gain a lot more knowledge quickly. So it did something for you. And we still have to do that. We still have to find a way to do that. And I think people appreciate you adding to their ability to save time, to learn what they have to learn and do it. And we just have to figure out what subjects and, you know, what topics they want to hit on a less frequent basis than all the time.
Definitely. Thanks a lot, guys, for joining us. I know you're both on the road, so I appreciate you taking the time out to chat with us.
Mark, thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
So now we'll turn from older media to newer media with Brian Boyer, who's going from the Chicago Tribune to NPR. He's a star hacker journalist, and he's taking his talents to NPR, leaving behind his gig running news apps at Chicago Tribune. And along with him, NPR is going to be pushing forward into more data journalism with a new team of 7 people on their news apps team. Joining us is Brian Boyer, who's now heading up that news apps team at NPR, previously at the Chicago Tribune. He was also one of the first recipients of the Medill School scholarships from Knight that taught journalism to coders. He's been featured on the Idea Lab blog while in that program, and he also helped start the Panda Project. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
So tell us about what your move to NPR. What was the what was your thought in going to NPR, and what's kind of the enticement for you?
Well, first things first, I wasn't looking for a new job. I loved my job at Tribune, and the great folks I had the opportunity to work with there. NPR called, and I definitely had to listen. You know, I'm a lifelong radio listener. And I'd say that public radio of some variety is pretty much my primary news source for local and national news, and has been for quite some time. And, radio to me is something that it just, in many ways, is so much a better fit for our lives these days than either reading news in print or reading news on the web. Like, it still fits perfectly well into my rushed, chaotic online lifestyle. And so I think that's pretty fascinating. Now, I'm not going to be doing any audio work. I don't think so at NPR. But they, they've really kind of combined a product that I believe in with a style of distributing the news that I think has a lot of upsides. And they've been doing great work on the web and on mobile for a while now. So
do you think, I mean, as far as, you know, you know what's happening there, what would they do with a news apps team? Because it isn't a newspaper. I mean, you typically think about most of the things being done online, data visualizations, databases, things of that sort. So will it still be kind of just the web for NPR? Or do you think there will be ways of getting audio into some of those visualizations and things?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'll describe our work at Tribune and how this stuff might contrast. I mean, at Tribune, our work was in one level, working with reporters and helping them find stories, so just helping folks work with data. And the process of reporting a story is no different for a print story than it is for a radio story, as far as I know. We'll see.
So that's the research part of the story, the news gathering, I guess you could say.
And then the publishing, online equivalent of writing, is in many ways similar, right? I think we'll be putting together stuff like we've done before. We'll retake we take a data set, we put it online, so then when someone listens to the story, they can go find their own story within it, which I really feel like is some of the best stuff we can do, is just provide listeners or readers with their own kind of context, their own personal context within a story. And that, you know, that's I think that's something we can do similar to NPR. I think the I would love to figure out how we can work with audio. I don't know how it's going to be. I mean, you know, our team isn't planning to be working directly on the, you know, NPR's sort of mobile apps. And they're like, you know, NPR.org, their main product, right? They already have a pretty great products team to do that. But we'll be, you know, working alongside that, and you know, maybe not with audio, but imagine, you know, NPR is a pretty strong brand on the go, right? And so if you look at a lot of the work that we've done at Tribune recently, we've been producing the stuff we've been putting online has been responsibly designed, right? And so that when you're on the train, or when you're out walking or whatever, you can it's just as easy to read the news on your mobile device or on your tablet when you're in bed as it is to read on a desktop web browser. And that's something I think is going to be really important about what we're going to be doing.
Brian, this is Rafa. The question I have is, should we look at it as sort of a guerrilla dev team that's going to sort of jump on issues and topics, or just, politics? I'm guessing NPR already has a politics app, but some big upcoming event, and you would create something in addition to providing context for radio shows through that. Would one-off apps be part of the mandate, you think?
I'd say one-off. It depends what you mean by app. If we're talking about app like writing native code for an iPhone, I would generally argue against that. But if we're talking about, say, applications that work on the web or work on the mobile web for special events, sure. I mean, I imagine we'll be doing something for the election, right?
Right.
And although I think it's important to say that I would be disappointed if we were just sort of lone gunmen. I don't necessarily want to be guerrillas. I want to work closely with the reporters and the editors on the storytelling, because the honest answer is that I'm not the expert in what the best politics application should be. I know a thing or two at applications, and I know how to do user research, and I'm an okay product designer. But I'm not the person to tell what's the right story to tell. So I hope that it's going to be very, very collaborative.
Yeah, and when you were at the Tribune, I mean – You know, you're dealing with kind of newspaper people who might or might not have, you know, be conversant in all the technologies and what they're doing and kind of the data part of it. Do you find that could be the same case at NPR, where, you know, there might be kind of a cultural thing where that you kind of have to get past to get them to work with you?
You know, I mean, we were kind of evangelizing from day one, Tribune.
Yeah.
But I feel like what I was surprised by is we didn't get nearly as much resistance as I thought we would. We were pretty much welcomed by the newsroom, and I feel like a lot of the backwardsness, technical backwardsness you might see in newsrooms, is frequently a result of our content management systems, much more so than our attitudes. And you know, there are definitely some groups that we made inroads with faster than other ones. Particularly, any of the organizations like Breaking News and Politics at Tribune, which were started by people run by people from Associated Press, they already kind of understood the speed of the web because they lived on the speed of the wire for a while, and they were sort of our earliest converts. There's definitely going to be some people we're going to need to convince, but that was frequently at Tribune our loss leader, so to speak, at Tribune, was helping people do data work, helping people do basic data journalism, and then eventually that would translate into things we would publish. And so that'll be one of my strategies out of the gate.
Can you point to anything at NPR that you've seen recently that you'd like to build on, or like good examples of things you'd like to see more of?
Sure. I mean, I'd say specifically the work they were doing with State Impact, or still doing with State Impact, is pretty tremendous. The State Impact project is they're dealing with sort of these local stories, but sort of presenting them with a national interest, but also providing sort of local context. So you can find the fracking site near you. I mean, they're beautiful presentations of sort of stories of local import, but also of national interest. And I think following the lead of that work they've been doing there is those are going to be great examples to hold up. When we first arrive, we arrive at NPR and we hold our first lunch and learn session. What can the news applications team do for you? We'll say stuff like State Impact, and we'll say stuff like what the New York Times team is doing, and stuff like what the LA Times team has been doing, what the Chicago Tribune's team's been doing, and then we'll say and a whole bunch of other stuff we don't know. We don't know what it's going to be yet, so you have to tell us.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining us. Appreciate it, and good luck converting more people in public media.
Thank you very much. It ought to be fun.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. I want to thank our co-host, Rafat Ali, as well as our guests, Larry Kramer, Jay Rosen, and Brian Boyer. Be sure to keep up with all the news, polls, and events over at PBS Media Shift at pbs.org/mediashift and our sister site, Idealab, at pbs.org/idealab and our news site, Collaboration Central, at collaborationcentral.org. We'll catch you next week.